So I was requested to speak something on Kadambakana Maharaj for tonight's presentation, and also to sing one bhajan, Yayanila Premadan, which is a bhajan we sing when we honor the disappearance of a great personality. So, I don't know, is it possible to put it up on the screen? No? It's not in the songbook? Should be there. So, yeah. I guess there is no one here that can operate this. Anybody? Okay. And the song is called Samsparsada Bhagavad Viraha Janiti Janita Vilapa. By Narottam Das Thakur. So, on the disappearance of a great personality, we honor his disappearance by honoring the Lord and many other great souls who also disappeared. This song is so, it's actually very deep in the mood of separation, Vipralamba Bhav. And it should be sung in that mood. Should we wait or should we begin? No response. You have it on your phone? Okay. Samsparsada Bhagavad Viraha Janita Vilapa is the title of the bhajan. So we'll begin. Yayanilo Premadana Karuna Prachu Yayanilo Premadana Karuna Prachu Aino papo gota gela acharyata khu Aino Sukha mora swarup rupa Gaha sanatha Gaha dasa ragunataha pati tabhava Gaha mora bhata juga Gaha kaviraj Gaha kaviraj Ekha vekotam Gelaha gora natara Basane kuti bhomata Anale pasivo Ghoranga gunera nirihi kota gele pabo Oho Sei sangha sanghira sanghe Ie koila vila Se sangha na paya kandhe naru dhammo das Hey, anilo prema dhara Ghoru na bhajyo Ghoru na bhajyo Hey no prabhu kota Gela chari dhaku Jaya Vaishnav Thakur Vaishnav Thakur Vaishnav Thakur Jaya Vaishnav Thakur Jaya Jaya Vaishnav Thakur Vaishnav Thakur Vaishnav Thakur Jaya Vaishnav Thakur Jaya Nayak Jai Vaishnav Thakur Vaishnav Thakur Vaishnav Thakur Jai Vaishnav Thakur Jaya Kadambakanam Maharaj Jaya Kandavakadam Maharaj Jaya Kandavakanam Maharaj Kadambakanam Maharaj Nithai Gaur Harivo 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 Nithai Gaur Harivo Gaur Vimanande Hariho Kadambakanana Maharaj Ki Jai. So read the translation. He who has brought the treasure of divine love and who was filled with compassion and mercy, where has such a personality as Advaitacharya gone? Where am I, Sarup Damodar and Rupa Goswami? Where is Sanatan? Where is Raghunath Das, the savior of the most fallen? Where am I, Raghunath Bhatta and Gopal Bhatta? And where is Krishna Das Kaviraj? Where did Lord Gauranga go, the great dancer, suddenly go? I will smash my head against the rock and enter into the fire. Where will I find Gauranga, the reservoir of all wonderful qualities? Being able to attain the association of Lord Gauranga, accompanied by all of these devotees in whose association he performed his pastimes, Narottam Das simply weeps. So when a great personality and someone who is well known amongst the devotees depart, there always is a feeling of sadness, a feeling of loss, a feeling of wanting to have taken more advantage of such a person's association. We always feel like that. Like, I wish I would have spent more time. I wish I would have had more of his association. I wish I would have had more chance to do service. We always feel like that. It's kind of like the natural mood of separation, that there seems to be something short on our side. We always felt like there could have been more opportunities for me to take advantage. And when I first met Kadambakanana Maharaj, it was maybe 20 years ago, at least, maybe even more. And it was in Vrindavan Dham. I had been traveling and I had come. And occasionally I would have visited Vrindavan. And so many times they would ask me to give the Bhagavatam class. And so giving Bhagavatam class in Vrindavan is quite, nerve-wracking. It's kind of like you look out and you see all these great personalities there, and there, and you're there in the most holiest of all dhams, and you have to give a class, and you really kind of like think, you know, I like to hide inside of the woodwork rather than give the class. But you do it anyway, because this is our service, and when we're asked to serve in that way, we just have to pray. And so when I would give class, and Kadambakanana Maharaj was at that time the temple president in Vrindavan. And always throughout the years, I always felt a little bit uneasy with the atmosphere was pure, but I wasn't so pure. So I was feeling always a little difficult there. But when I would come, and when Kadambakanda Maharaj was there as a temple president, he would always somehow or other lift me up by his presence, sometimes by making a comment or asking a question in class just to inspire the class even more. And then I would, after I would finish the class, I didn't know him at the time. This was like our first meetings. He would always be so nice to me. I was thinking, I never get this kind of response from the temple presidents in Vrindavan. Because every year they would change 19 years, 19 different presidents. To stay temple president in Vrindavan was one of the greatest austerities, because there was only so many other energies circling around there. It was quite difficult. But he accepted that difficult service, and he lived in Vrindavan for many years, and performing kirtan. So my impression was, here's a very nice devotee. That was my impression. I can tell by nature he was very concerned and kind-hearted about how he dealt with devotees. So when I had that experience, I felt somewhat happy after giving my class, which many times in the past wasn't like that. Obviously because of my own shortcomings. But he always made me feel like, yeah, thank you for giving the class. It was a nice class, even though it wasn't nice. So I always felt comfortable in his association. I remember in 1995, I think it was 1995, I was in, I was in Chicago at the time. And I heard a report, because after I met him in Vrindavan, we didn't see each other much after that. This was a few years later, 1995, I heard a report that he had been shot by some devotee, who was actually a devotee, who tried to kill him. Yes, this is the way it was in Vrindavan. To be temple president in Vrindavan means to deal with the local mafia. We have that problem even today, that you can't make too many changes, otherwise the mafia might decide to move in. Now, in the history of Vrindavan, in the history of that, you'll see when Krishna was here, what was it like to be in Vrindavan? The demons were attacking all the time. It says there were at least two demons per day attacking in Vrindavan. So whenever there's a holy place, the demons look for opportunities to destroy it. Of course they can't, they get destroyed themselves. But this is the way it is, and we have that same situation in Mayapur too, that there is so much illicit activities going on around that you have to be careful if you're devotees there, and especially if you're in the management. So Maharaj, I guess, was, because he was of his pure nature, he was always trying to make changes for the improvement of the spiritual atmosphere. And so that wasn't so much appreciated by the local mafia there. So they arranged for him to be killed. And he told me what happened. When I heard the news when I was in Chicago at the time, I was really shocked. I hadn't known him so well, but I took it very seriously. I took it really to heart, because that little bit of an experience that I had with him was so sweet and so heartwarming that although it was short, it really made an impression on me in my life. And then he told me, he used to tell me that it was on, I think it was, the date was, if I'm wrong, January 21st every year. That's when he was shot. He was shot in the back, in the lower part of the just above the hip. And he would tell me that every year on that date, he would have tremendous pain from that. That same day, every year, the pain would come back really severe, like he was being shot again. So I guess there is a certain atmospheric mood where when something happens on a particular date and that day comes up the next year, there is some re-experience of that calamity, or even maybe even from the positive side. But Krishna saved his life that time. He told me exactly what happened. He was sitting on the toilet, and somebody came from the back and pointed a gun right at his head, and it was just as soon as he pulled the trigger, Maharaja got up. And I guess Krishna was in the heart. As soon as he got up, the bullet hit him in the back instead of, was aimed at his head. So he escaped death. That was in 1995. Before then, he told me he was traveling in one Muslim country, I think. They were doing some preaching. I don't remember all of the details. But they were, I think it might have been Bangladesh during the, some of the early parts of the Bangladesh conflicts there with Islams and against the Hindus. So the Islamic army had captured a bunch of people, devotees, and they wanted to kill all of the Americans. And they thought he was an American. So they put him up against the firing squad. But then he started to speak Dutch. And he acted like he didn't know any English at all. And he just kept speaking Dutch, and then they realized he was an American, so they let him go. So twice, yeah. And Prahladananda Maharaj was telling me just the other day, yesterday, a couple of days ago, that him and Kadambakana Maharaj had many experiences together where they both just escaped the hands of death. That happens to devotees a lot who preach. At least three times somebody pulled a gun on me when I was out preaching. And one guy was very serious. So, you know, when you're preaching, you never know what's going to happen. So Prahladananda Maharaj and Mara and Kadamba Kanha were driving in a car, and they were talking, comparing the different times that they escaped death. And while they were talking, the engine blew up in the car and caught on fire. Just when they were talking about how they escaped death, the car's engine blew up and it was on fire. They had to run out of the car. So, you know, padam padam, yavi padam, it's a dangerous place. You never know what will happen next. But the Krishna factor was always there in the lives of devotees. And I can talk about so many senior devotees who had similar experiences in their life where they just narrowly escaped, you know, death. It's just, for those who are out regularly preaching, and you find these experiences happen. So Maharaj, but he was a person that was quite fearless in his Krishna consciousness. He wanted to take chances, he wanted to preach. And so he carried on preaching. And then he started to develop more and more into the mood of kirtan. That came a little bit in the early parts of that, even before then when he was in Vrindavan, but it really developed when he traveled in the Western countries, especially in the UK and in other areas of the world. So he really started to develop the whole mood of kirtan. I remember his kirtans were so powerful that you remember the Beatles? Yeah. Well, if you know the history of the Beatles, when the Beatles used to sing, I mean, women would scream at the top of their lungs and faint, and then they would always have ambulances outside of the Beatle concerts, because the women would just go into ecstasy and start screaming. And then they would have to carry these ladies out. I guess it might have happened to the men too, but there's no record of that. But and so I was in Germany one time, and we were, Sanchi Nandana Maharaj had organized these series of kirtan programs each year in Germany. It was starting in around the year 2008, 9, 10, and 11. He found this beautiful resort area in some remote place in Germany, I can't remember where. It was not so far from Leipzig. And it was a long list of kirtan ears chanting. So Kadamba Ganamara was there. And I was outside. I was outside the hall. I wasn't in the kirtan. And then I heard this kirtan going on, and people were screaming. Ladies. And they were just like yelling and jumping up. And then I walked in and I said, wow. And then I stayed for the kirtan. And he was able to, inspire such devotion in people. And many times that when he would sit down to begin to sing, people would start dancing before he even started singing. They would get up, he would say, just sit down, wait for a while. Now his kirtans were so deep in devotion. It wasn't that he was just, musically inclined, which he was. He was very musically inclined. And he also had a lot of, power behind his kirtans. They were full of his enthusiasm. And, of course, at the end, sometimes he would get wiped out. He's so tired from the kirtans, and I would talk to him. And he would say, slow down, Maharaj. He said, I can't. I can't slow down. That's the way it is. So that was his mood, to put all his heart and soul and all his energy into kirtan. And we all had, of course, maybe most of us here have had experience with Maharaj's kirtans that are just unbelievably powerful. And so I would always meet him, especially in Radhadesh Mellows every year he would be there. Which I can actually say, and I might be challenged, but still I'll make the statement, I think it's the best kirtan program in the entire ISKCON society is Radhadesh Mellows. Why? Because it's so sweet. It's the most sweetest atmosphere you can ever imagine. And always the top-notch kirtans come, kirtaniers come from all over the world to be there. The Maharaj would come practically every year and sing. And he would blow the roof off the building, with his kirtans. And I would be checking, see if any of the pillars were breaking, or because the kirtans were so full of high energy, but also so much devotion combined. When you have that two combinations of high energy with devotion, sometimes we see kirtaniers, they have a lot of energy. But sometimes when you put a lot of energy in it, the devotion element starts to diminish because of the high energy. But when Maharaj used to sing with that such high energy, the devotional element would just go up and up and up. So his kirtans were... And then we would meet many times. We met in Germany, in London, in Vrindavan. A few years ago we met in Vrindavan, he was singing, and when he would see me, he would become happy, and then because he knows I like to dance. And then I would try to inspire all of the other devotees to get involved with the kirtan, and then when everybody starts dancing, when the kirtan is going, then the whole atmosphere becomes powerful. So we would meet, Radhadesh Mellows, Mayapur, so many times in Mayapur, we chanted and danced together. He even danced with me many times. He would do his particular Dutch style dance, which I can't really describe. But it was really unique, to say the least. It was very, very pleasant to watch. So many, a couple times he would get up when he would be singing, and then he'd just get up and start dancing. So we would, that would happen in Mayapur, and it happened once in Vrindavan also. So we would meet there, and then Radha Deshmelos, Germany, Bhaktivedanta Manor, and other places around the world we would always meet. It would, and it'd be amazed in Goloka Dham in Germany also. And I would be amazed. Every time I'd go to a kirtan program, he'd be there. And I would think, hey, this is good. So he inspired so many in kirtan, and he left so many people with so much happiness in kirtan that it's a legend that has really been established in ISKCON so nicely. And you see, even in his last days before he disappeared, you know, I spoke with Jayadvaita Maharaj, who's his guru, Maharaj. This was in July of last year. And we were at a kirtan program in Birmingham. And I was speaking about, Kadambakana Maharaj, he's got cancer, but he's not doing anything about it. He's just going to let it go. And Jayadvaita Maharaj was really clear in saying, yes, he doesn't want to waste time running this way and that way and this doctor, he's going to use his time, whatever his time is left, simply to stay fully engaged in devotional service. So he did that. He didn't, as soon as he heard that the cancer was quite, what we say, developed, he didn't think, well, I'm going to spend so much time fighting it. Most of us would have probably went the other route and tried to do something. But he accepted it as Krishna's arrangement, because for a great soul, the message of death is not something that they fear, it's something that they get ready for. That's all. They welcome death as an opportunity to again attain Krishna's association in the spiritual world, or at least come to the point of associating with Krishna somewhere in the material world. So for a great soul, they don't fear death. For us, it's a loss, because when somebody we love, or somebody who is dear to us, or somebody who has made such a deep impression in spreading Krishna consciousness around the world, it's a loss to our whole society, to our whole preaching force. And we feel that loss also. But we know that this is the inevitable process. Prabhupada says, as long as you have a material body, you have to understand death will come at a certain point. So Maharaj understood that, having escaped death so many times in his life, innumerable times, he came so close to leaving the body. But now he understood, I think, that this is Krishna's way of concluding my activities in the material world. And so he accepted it, and fearlessly he just, after spending time in some of the Western countries meeting devotees, in September he decided to, make his way to Vrindavan. But while he was in Vrindavan, he was still preaching. He was still giving kirtans. It was like, for some people, it was the same person. He never really diminished in his devotional service. He stayed fixed in chanting, dancing, preaching, inspiring devotees, and coming on to speak to his disciples and others about what he was going through and how they should see it also. Because it says, and you'll see, this is written in the Shastras, that when the spiritual master leaves, the disciple cries. It's just natural. The disciple feels a great loss. But But that crying is actually their love for the spiritual master. But when you look at it from the pure spiritual point of view, just like there was one great soul, I can't think of his name. It's mentioned in the Shastras that he was leaving the body. Obviously, he was about to depart. And disciples were around. They were also crying. And then he looked at them and he said to them, "You're crying for me, but I should be actually crying for you, because you have to stay in this material world." So that is the consciousness of a person who understands what is the actual truth of life. That life is to prepare yourself for death. That's the only meaning of life. Life is to mean to prepare yourself for death. That whatever time is left in our life, that time must be used in order to prepare. Of course, when we're young, we still have so many ideas on how we're going to enjoy this world and how many things we're going to do and how many plans we're going to make and how many places we're going to go and how many achievements we're going to do. That's youth. But when you get older, you start thinking, why did I waste time with all of that? So, one who knows understands that, yeah, just like Bhakti Tirtha Swami, he wrote that book just before he left, Die Before Dying. And in there he describes all of the things you have to die to before you can actually leave the world in the proper consciousness or Krishna consciousness. Our attachment to friends, relatives, family members, our money, our possessions, our plans, all of these things we have to let go. And Kadama Gana Maharaj, I think he let it go many times. Just stayed fixed in devotional service. Because as a sannyasi, he had no plans for enjoyment in the material world. But a devotee wants to stay and preach as long as they can so they can help as many conditioned souls as they can to bring them closer to Krishna or even back to Krishna. So the devotee thinks like that. Now let me stay as long as I possibly can and try to help as many as persons as I can, because this is what pleases Krishna, this is what pleases Lord Chaitanya. The devotee thinks like that, but when he gets the message that it's time to go, then all of a sudden everything focuses on whatever time I have left, let me purify whatever taints of material desires I still have and get ready to ultimately to make that journey back to Godhead. Because everything in this world is ephemeral. There's one story I remember. I was in Beverly Hills, California. I don't know if you know what Beverly Hills, California is. It's where all the movie stars and all of the big movie producers, people who are in Hollywood, they live, authors and very important people. So I was connected with this one author. And he liked Krishna consciousness, so he invited me to come to speak to his friends. And all of his friends were like highly placed people in the movie industry. So I had to give a lecture to these people. So I'm thinking, all right, what am I going to say to these people? They got money, they got prestige, they got a lot of things. So what am I going to tell them? So I was really, struggling to think of what to say. And then I remembered there was a little story that I heard. It's just some little analogy about life. So I thought I said, all right, let me start with this and see how it goes. So the story goes like this. There was one greedy merchant. He had four wives. And his fourth wife was his favorite wife. His third wife was his second favorite. His second wife was his third favorite. And his first wife he'd completely neglected. And so now he gets the message. The doctor tells him, "My dear greedy merchant, you only have 6 months left in life. There's no cure for your disease, so make your plans." So now he's scared. He doesn't know what to do. Life is short. He lives simply to gain material things. So he decides to talk to his fourth wife, his favorite wife. He says, "My dear wife, I'll be leaving soon. Would you go with me?" She says, "Haribo, nice knowing you, but no way." So he thinks, "All right, let me try the third wife." So he goes to the third wife and he explains his situation. "Will you come with me?" She says, "Well, actually, after you leave, I'll get married again." So he's thinking, "Oh my God." Goes to the second wife. I'm telling this to these rich people now. And he goes to the second wife and says, "My dear wife, you know, I'm leaving, I'm sick. Could you come with me?" She says, "Well, you know, I'll go to the grave where they bury you, but as far as I can go." And so now he's embarrassed. The first wife, which he neglected all the time, he's thinking, "I have to ask her. She's the only one that's left, but I never gave her any attention. I never gave her any affection, nothing." So he goes, and now he's desperate. His only, the only wife left. So he asks her, tells her his situation. "My dear wife, would you come with me?" She says, "I'll never leave you." So I told that story. So what are the four wives? The fourth wife is the body. It's the most dearest thing to us. So when we leave the world, the body stays here. The third wife is our possessions, our money. So when we leave, somebody else gets it. "I'll get married again." The second wife is our friends and our relatives. They come to the grave to see us off, and that's as far as they go. And the first wife is the soul, the one we neglected throughout our whole life, and said, "I'll never leave you." Some people also use it and said it's actually Krishna, the first wife. So I told that story to all of these rich people. I mean, that was a blockbuster. I didn't know what they were going to say. You know, because these people are, you know, they got prestige, they got money. You know, at the end, and then of course I spoke in general after that, at the end, many of them came up and appreciated the story. They said, "Thank you." And many of them sat down and told me how miserable they were. How, you know, they've been married a couple times. They had their lives were a mess. Although they were big people in Hollywood and had a lot of money and some popularity, so none of them were happy. Some of them didn't even talk to me, but many of them actually did and wanted to hear more about what is this Krishna consciousness. But that story really illustrates the story of life, is that the body, it'll go. Whatever we have, everybody else gets when we leave. Our relatives and friends, they'll come to the grave, but that's about all. But Krishna never leaves the soul. So that is the success that whatever time, and Kadambakana Maharaj was really amazing. He showed by example face death in the most noble way, in the most Krishna conscious way. Live your life just serving until the time comes, and stay engaged in devotional service. What will happen? What will happen? Nobody can understand how things in this world are very unpredictable. So as long as we stay fixed in Krishna consciousness, whether we're living or we're on our way out of this world, we're in the best situation, because while we're living, we're happy, and when we leave, we actually attain the platform of supreme happiness and association with Krishna, if we perfect our lives in pure devotional service. So for a devotee, there's never any loss. But for us who are still here in the material world, the ones who had a relationship with such great personalities, such as Kadambakanana Maharaj, and others who have also departed, yeah, we always feel like, why, Krishna, why did you take that person? But Krishna's perfect. Krishna's perfect. Whatever he does perfectly. He knows what is actually best for everyone. But he's also teaching us that, you know, when someone close to us leaves the world, it's a message that we can learn from, how to live our life in such a way as to not waste time trying to chase after the things of this world, which are, you know, here today and gone tomorrow. But to live your life in devotional service. And Kadambakanana Maharaj was really, really the epitome or the height of perfection in that area. He gave himself 100%, just like when we were in the COVID lockdown. He didn't like it at all. He wanted to preach. He wanted to travel. So he was one of the first to break out of it. He told his disciples, some of them that were here, I want to buy a car and I want to travel all over Europe and just preach. And he did. He bought a brand new car and they started traveling this way and that way, going this way. So he didn't really appreciate, you know, not being able to move around. He wanted to continue. And all of my experiences with Maharaj were always so nice and so pleasant and so friendly. He was very personal. I remember the last time I saw him here, after the class, when he got off the Vyasasan, and when he came up and we started talking, and he was just asking, how are you and how are things going, what are you doing, and it's just always friendly, nice talks. And we also would talk about, you know, sometimes we joke about things. But that was his mood. He was very personal, very friendly, very down to earth, yeah, very spiritually powerful at the same time. And, yeah, and I think those of us who are here in Ljubljana are quite fortunate, because he spent so much time here. And in fact, this was one of his favorite places to come in the world. And he, of course, took some of the devotees here and made them your brother, right? His personal associates. I'll tell you what happened to me the other morning. It's the same morning he left. I was thinking, I just saw Bhagavad Dharma the other night, and it was Gaur Purnima. So I said to Bhagavad Dharma, you know, I want to write to Kadambakanana Maharaj. I think he's going to leave soon. I want to write to him. So can you give me the email address of your son? So he did. So the next day I was so busy that I didn't write. And then the following day, the morning of the 9th, I got up and I was just ready to start japa. And my program is, I don't do anything until my japa is finished. I just sit and chant 16 rounds. Don't try to talk to me. And I, you know, I'm just like, I'm just out of the office, you know. And so I was all ready to sit down, and then this feeling, strong feeling came over, right to Maharaj. And I was thinking, I'll finish my japa first, and then I'll write. But the feeling came again, and this time I said, I don't usually do this, I always do my japa first, but Krishna's telling me I should write, so I did. So I went, I opened my computer, it was 3:30 in the morning, and I started to write a letter. And I wrote, and then I spent some time writing the letter. And then after I was done, I thought, well, I'll go back later and then edit it and fix it up and make it even nicer. And I was going to shut the computer, and then I heard a voice said, no, finish it now. And then I thought, all right, Krishna, I gotta listen. So I finished the letter now. And I was 5 o'clock in the morning when I finished the letter, and I sent the letter at that time. So that 5 o'clock, that was 10:30 in the morning in Vrindavan. And he left in an hour and a half later. It was just an hour and a half. So Krishna allowed me to, you know, write that letter while he was still personally present. Of course, I'm not sure if it got read to him or not, and even if it did, he was in a state of quite internal mood at that time. But at least I was able to write the letter while he was still personally present, and I felt really good about that. It's Krishna's mercy. So, yeah. So he reasons out to say that Vaishnavas die when thou art still living in sound. Vaishnavas die to live and living, spread the holy name around. So Maharaj is who goes somewhere else and start doing kirtan. Some other planet, or maybe Krishna will take him back to the spiritual world. But whatever it is, for a devotee, his destination is always glorious, and it's always auspicious. Their lives are glorious, and their destination is auspicious. So, and they leave behind so much that we can learn from. They inspire us in our Krishna consciousness. They teach us things that are valuable that we can use to make advancement. Ishisi Pancha Tattva Ki Jai. And they help us in so many ways to show us the importance of being dedicated to devotional service. So we always remember that. So we are indebted to great souls because of them we're able to, you know, continue on in our Krishna consciousness with enthusiasm. They lay the path for us to follow. And if we follow that path, it's auspicious. Like that. So, when Maharaj left, I didn't feel any sadness. It happens to me a number of times. Because I know there's certain times when a person leaves, you know it's so glorious that there's no reason for sadness. But the sadness will come later, after some time. It always happens like that. After some time, when we feel the loss. But initially, when it happens, at least this is my experience, and it's the experience of many devotees. That happened to me when my dear disciple Janakinath left a year and a half ago in London. He'd been fighting cancer for at least 6 years. Finally, the cancer took him. But he was also practically fixed in devotional service all the way up to the end. And when he left, it was a celebration. All his not only the devotees, but even the relatives. His relatives told me, it doesn't feel like a death, it feels like a wedding. His mother told me that. The mother of the son, yeah. So sometimes when a great soul, Krishna just lets you know, hey, it's glorious. He's now with me. So
So if we live our life in that way, we'll also have that same experience that when we leave the world. It says that for a pure devotee, when they leave the world, there's no time between the time they leave and the time that they enter into the spiritual world. It's timeless. You can't measure any time. It's instantaneously. And contrary to that, the more sinful a person is, the more they have to wait for their next body. But for a pure devotee, it says, it's like going to sleep and waking up in the spiritual world. It's like that. But as it's described, it's in the fourth canto in the Bhagavatam that explains that. And it's just instantaneously, there's no time that you could say happened between the time they left and the time they... It's just the soul is immediately there with the spirit in the spiritual world. So for that kind of departure, there's no pain. It's just, you know, riding on the airship of the spiritual airplane back to the spiritual world. So, yeah. So we shouldn't fear death. We should fear wasting time. Let us use your time in the most beneficial way to become Krishna conscious. Then when that moment comes, then Taktva Deham Purna Janmani 19 months, 80 Sorjana, back home, back to God. Life is successful. Because we've been living in this world, how many lives? We can't count. Millions. In different species, Karanam, Guru Sangha, Sosada, Sajoni, Janmasu, so many species of life. And now we made it to the human form, and then how many human forms have we made, have we done until we actually came in contact with the bona fide spiritual master, which is so rare. And so, one who does that is so fortunate. But if you have a good fortune, but you can't take advantage of the good fortune, that is even more, that is a great form of misfortune, sadness. So we are very fortunate. We've come to the path of pure devotional service, and now we have a chance to solve all problems of life and return again to our home in the spiritual world. So that means using our time in the way that is beneficial for making advancement in Krishna consciousness. So death is not the fear. The fear is wasting time. Because there are people who die in the world and they say, oh my God, while they're dying they said, oh, I wasted so much time. I could have been doing other things that are more beneficial. Don't come to that point. Don't sing that song that I could have did more. Give everything you can while you're here, and then when the time comes, then you happily leave the world, knowing that it's the destination is perfect. So that was Maharaj. He was an example. Someone should write a book on his life, as in to help us understand deeper what it means to actually be fixed in pure devotional service. He was amazing, really amazing. He gave every ounce of energy in service. Okay, so we're a little after 8. Anybody want to say anything? Any comments or Bhagavad Dharma? Oh yeah.
Yes, my son told me that on the day when he left Maharaj, just before starting to leave his body, Nitai came to his room and started to perform worship of Giriraj.
Perform what?
Worship,
puja.
Puja
for Giriraj, because this was his
deity.
His deity. And when Nitai offered incense and flower, the Maharaj made the same gestures with his hand as Nitai. Mm-hmm. So he made his puja along with Nitai.
Oh wow.
And then he turned on his back and started to leave his body.
Yes. So his last act was worshipping his deity,
yes.
Govardhan.
Yes, exactly.
It's beautiful, huh? And Krishna inspired that. Nice. Yeah, that's beautiful. Really wonderful to hear that. Because that moment is like the moment when you're leaving. What are you thinking about? So he was worshiping when he was leaving. That means, you know, that means his life, his destination is perfect. Something else?
One thing more. The day before he left, he tried to say something, and they tried to understand him. And then he said two last words: mission above all.
Say again?
Mission above all.
Mission above all.
Above all, yes.
On the mission of Lord Chaitanya?
Yes.
Yes.
That was his that was his last words.
Mission above all.
Yes.
Keep focus on what his life is all about, is to spread Krishna consciousness. Yeah, he lived it. He spoke it, he lived it, and he taught it. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I remember that really inspired me when he, during the lockdown, he was one of the first to break out and just want to go out and travel and preach and not stay, you know, restricted. Yeah, a devotee is fearless because they know Krishna is there. Nice, mission above all. Maybe somebody should write a book and that would be the title. Make that the title of the book, Mission Above All. I don't have enough experiences in my own personal relationships with him to actually write anything extensive, but there are people who really knew him well and spent much time with him. And especially when he was preaching in Germany. He preached a lot in Germany. He preached a lot in Holland also. He preached a lot in the UK. Those who knew him really, really well. I remember when he was doing kirtan in the UK. This was in, around August or something around there. Yeah, it was around August time. I came to the kirtan, and you know I'm a little crazy, so. And I don't like seeing people sitting down during kirtans. So I got everyone up to dance. And he was so happy. I think the mood was people wanted to sit down. And you know, in the UK, the temple is so small and the congregation is so large. It's so tight in there. But still, when we started the dance, everything broke loose. And he was just smiling. So I felt good that, you know, I did some service. Anyone else would like to say something?
having any disciples here?
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. So those of you, you know, who are disciples, just, it is difficult, but you should know that what will please Maharaj is that if you continue on and be enthusiastic in your devotional service, and don't let this disappearance temper or water down your enthusiasm. Sometimes that happens. I remember when I was there when Bhakti Tirtha Swami disappeared. It was 2005, June 27. I was in Gitanagari at the time. And we had an all-night ceremony. Started around 9 o'clock in the night and ended at 4 o'clock in the morning. And the next day, the devotees were really, really, really distraught. Some of them said, I can't go on. I can't go on. I don't know how I'm going to go on. And I was there with one other sannyasi, Dhanadhar Swami. And we spent the whole day just talking to the devotees, trying to encourage them that if you want to really please your spiritual master, you know, use this opportunity to increase your Krishna consciousness. Do it as a service to him. And that way he'll be very happy. Because the most happiest thing that the spiritual master sees